Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm in Vermont, a producer of award-winning handmade cheese from goat and cow milk. For more information, visit considerbardwellfarm.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tune.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Greg Bresnitz, and that was Beverly Big thanks to Leo for introducing us. They will be in studio live later today. But at first, we have, Maria Godoy from The Salt. Maria, are you there?
Yeah, I am here.
Oh, you sound nice and loud and clear. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
We were introduced to Maria from the good people at South by Southwest. Darren and I will be hosting a series of panels with Heritage Radio Network on March 14th at the Driscoll. And we were connected to Maria around the concept of the state of modern food reporting. Unfortunately, Maria can't join us, but that gives us an excuse to talk to her on this beautiful Sunday. Maria, in your own words, can you give listeners kind of a quick overview of what The Salt is and what you cover?
Yeah, sure. The Salt is the food blog from NPR, and we cover pretty much the whole world of through the lens of food. We cover the health and nutrition aspects of what we eat, the business aspects, the issues related to the environment, how food production impacts the planet, and issues of sustainability, as well as culture, how what we eat defines who we are. So really, everything that has to do with how we live through the lens of food.
And we're going to touch a little bit more on that in a moment, but let's go back to 2011 when The Salt was formed. What was the current state in your mind of food reporting in kind of relation to the opening you saw for The Salt?
Well, when we launched, we actually did an assessment, and there are something like 10,000 food blogs out there. And so we asked ourselves, well, what are we going to add to that? And what we felt we were adding was journalistic rigor to the question of food. There were a lot of people covering food, but more in the recipe, great restaurants, top chefs sort of way. We wanted to address the questions that people are hearing, what's the deal with GMOs? Is cleansing, juicing really good for us? What about issues related to workers' rights and the minimum wage fight, which, wasn't really actually hitting up then, but that was part of our lens. And again, the historical and cultural aspects of food, we really thought we wanted to bring the same sort of thing that NPR brings to all of its reporting, like rigorous investigation and, skepticism, which is like a key tool in a journalist's tool belt, to food, to what we eat. There's a lot of interest. Everybody considers themselves a foodie nowadays, and that was true back then, too. But as people ask questions about what we eat and where it comes from, we wanted to say, okay, we're the journalists. Come to us, and we can answer. There really wasn't anybody that seemed to be doing that much. Now, that said, there were some people reporting on Civil Eats was around already, and
right.
I have a lot of respect for what they do.
Of course.
They tend to have an advocacy approach to covering food issues, which I think is one of the things that distinguishes us from them. As like I said, we're journalists, so we bring a lens of objectivity. We try not to be advocates, but just present you the facts, and you can present and you can decide for yourselves. Grist was doing some of this on the environmental front, but their general environmental issues are not really solely dedicated to food coverage.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is when they did the climate march last year in New York, I was surprised to see, the minimum wage had a section, GMOs, anti-GMOs and everything. And I think it's kind of what you cover there was also really manifested there, is that the world is now viewed as food as kind of a lens. And how do you feel that, was there any kind of indication early on that you were definitely onto something for this approach?
I think the fact that we had a tremendous response immediately, we launched and 3 months later we won a James Beard Award,
okay.
Which was
that's pretty good.
Incredible.
That's pretty
and
good.
Not expected at all. I think that was sort of the first big indicator we got that we're doing the right thing, that we're on the right track, and that people are listening and want this sort of coverage.
What was the what article was the James Beard for, or what subject matter?
I'm sorry, it was a Best Food Blog.
Oh, okay.
Best Group Food Blog,
so
yeah.
Just en masse.
Yes, en masse, for just, sort of, best food blog just for everything we do. Yeah. And I got to tell you, that was I was kind of like a deer caught in headlights on that stage because I was not expecting it. I did not have a speech prepared or anything, and it was a good validation for us that the approach we were taking was the right thing to do. And nowadays, of course, a lot of publications are doing this. I should say Mark Bittman, of course, already had his column in the New York Times, and I think he's done a world of good in enlightening the general public about these issues. He really helped lead the way. Tamar Hespall in the Washington Post has a very great food column where she tackles a lot of these issues. And then there are other general interest publications that do some of this too, like The New Yorker. Michael Spector has done some great reporting on food issues. Lucky Peach is a wonderful publication. And then there's so much. Gastropod, I'm a big fan of, the food podcast that takes tackles more of the cultural issues, I'd say, but with a really smart lens.
Is there anything, before we kind of dive deeper into like what, you know, you cover, is there anything that is just, you know, not on the table or you just try to avoid, or, you know, you say other people do that well, we're not going to go down that route?
Oh, on the salt?
Yeah.
What we don't do, it's funny, people are always asking us when we do stories, like, we don't do recipes, except very rarely, and that's partly because everybody else does that. And in terms of more serious issues, like issues we stay away from, I don't think there's anything we say we're not going to cover that because we're scared to cover it, but we want to make sure that we actually have something to add to the conversation. I think that's always, that's generally good rule of thumb for any journalist. When you tackle a story, make sure that you're adding to the conversation and helping to bring something to it that enlightens the audience.
And being around for 5 years now, what are some of the things that you've seen that, you know, that you could keep returning to, or topics or areas that have taken on, a home on the salt?
I'm sorry, what do you, like topics that we return to over and over?
Yeah,
you mean?
Exactly.
I think there's always, we return to a lot of things. Food waste, actually, is a really interesting topic. I don't think there are a lot of people talking about it 5 years ago. Jonathan Bloom, I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he's like a luminary on this topic. He wrote a great book on food waste maybe 6 or 7 years ago. Don't quote me on that. But nobody else is really talking about it. And just in the last couple of years, I think consumer awareness about food waste, we waste something like 40% of all the food we produce in this country, has really grown. And that's great. You know, that's a climate issue. I don't think it didn't even register 3 years ago, I'd say, or not very much. And now whenever we cover food waste and, you know, the issue of ugly fruit, that so much of the produce that we that is produced gets tossed because it doesn't meet cosmetic beauty standards set by retailers, but it's in fact perfectly nutritious and perfectly good to eat, and sometimes just really amusing looking, like eggplants with faces on them. They happen to grow that way.
There's a great
nature
Instagram
is imperfect,
that.
And that's beautiful too. But anyway, that's something that people are becoming aware of just in the last year, that you see like this passion for, and that's something that we hit again and again. That's pretty new, I'd say.
And do you feel that do you feel that you're kind of like a channel that people can go to for, like, you know, now food waste, but like new issues, or using food as a lens to kind of shine lights on other parts, and people come to you with those stories where they might not feel like other outlets will cover?
Yes, I do think that's the case. I do think people know that we like to take a quirky angle on things sometimes, but not just for quirk's sake, but really, you know, it's like a step back and connect the dots, you know, about how what's on our plate affects, the person who picks coffee in Rwanda, or basically, the world is very big, but it's also very small, and so we like to take stories that connect those dots and help you see how the choices you make as a consumer have a whole host of ramifications.
Great. Well, we're going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to dive into food as a lens for current civil issues. We'll be right back with The Salt. This is a song called Barnacles Live from Snacky Tunes.
Scrape these barnacles
I love that song. Laura Stevenson, Barnacles. Maria, so the big thing that I think that what The Salt does so well and is so apparent now is how people use food to frame so many civil and civic issues right now, which I think maybe wasn't as much as a focus or a lens before. If you could maybe touch a little bit about how people are using that to frame, you know, in a very real and personal way, issues that have been around like climate change, greenhouse gases, minimum wage, et cetera.
Well, I think probably the biggest issue is meat and meat consumption, like in climate change. I think people are becoming increasingly aware of the environmental cost of eating meat, and as well as, you know, health issues involved, like the World Health Organization issued when they proclaimed, you know, that eating red and processed meats could have carcinogenic effects. I think that grabbed headlines around the world. But in terms of climate issues, I think meat is probably the thing that people are becoming most aware of in recent years. In terms of how it's being framed, what I think it's most interesting is how many different publications talk about these. Like, again, I said New York Times and Mark Bittman would address these issues. And there's Grist, too, but really, we get questions about that all the time. When we launched, like 3 or 4 years ago, we did a series on Meat Week, which was hugely popular, and we revisited some of the questions. We had conducted a survey back then with our partners and at Truven, which is Truven Health Analytics, and we found that, in fact, there's growing awareness about meat, and people told us that they were trying to eat less meat, and that's still the case now, although the numbers are a little bit flat. So while people are talking about these issues, they are not necessarily changing as much as we might think. About a third of Americans said they're trying to cut back, basically. But so this, I think the awareness is there, but translating that from awareness to changing consumer habits is not quite happening.
I think
I'm not sure if that's what you're asking, though.
It is, and I think what's great is that, like, before, the message was like, well, we have one shot, so it's don't eat meat, and it's like, that's the article because that's the space provided. Now you're seeing, like, a more nuanced thing. So, like, you know, for example, my friend and I shared an article where it's like, okay, fine, don't cut out meat, but if, you know, just eat less steak because cows are, like, it's worse for the environment than, say, chicken. And it's not, you know, it's a bit of a more nuanced article, but since we've read that, I've pretty much cut out steak for, like, the last 3 months and any type of, like, red meat. And I believe, like, place like The Salt and, like, the Times and all the other places are allowing for more conversation to allow people to dive into, like, a more kind of, like, nuanced and niche conversation that might not otherwise have existed where, like, there wasn't as much real estate.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the fact is, you know, that conversation is outside of food media, too. I mean, look at Beyonce. She has that vegan meal delivery service, for instance, you know. Who's if Queen Bey can't get the message out, then who can, right?
Right. But, I mean, it's like it's hit, like, they made it like, I mean, no one's even questioning, like, the vegan, like, the world has already been built. So it's now the question of, like, how to act within that world. And the fact that you're right, that she went vegan for a month and they have that delivery service, it's just beyond that conversation. The facts are established.
Right, exactly. Like, people are becoming more aware, and they're sort of saying, well, how do I incorporate this, you know? And actually, the survey that we did, that we, like, published recently, found that people are trying to eat more fruits and vegetables. I think that's a trend that that sort of reflects ongoing coverage, that people are trying to make their, like, vegetables more of the center of the plate. And that doesn't mean they're necessarily giving up meat altogether, but again, they're just becoming more aware. Yeah, so I think the conversation has changed dramatically. But again, consumer habits are slow to change, but there's adjustments. I mean, but think of also like all the vegan and vegetarian restaurant concepts that are launching, like Chef Jose Andres is doing the new veggie centric chain Beefsteak, you know, for instance.
Yeah, which is great. Are there any stories that you feel are out there right now that you know, are that are not getting traction that you think are going to be, you know, outside of, let's just say, water, critical issues that will be on the table in the coming, you know, months and years?
That is I'd have to think a little bit more about that. I don't know that it's not getting necessarily attention. This type of thing is not necessarily the purview of traditional food media. But I think this is like a traditional issue, like the issues related to food insecurity, for instance, like SNAP and the gap that people have, and that the benefits don't necessarily help make people people. Let me rephrase that.
Sure.
That the benefits don't necessarily go far enough to the end of the month for people to actually stay fed, so they have to hit food pantries. And there's lots of other data that shows, for instance, that SNAP recipients, you know, the program formerly known as food stamps, end up in the hospital toward the end of the month, too. Like, there's lots of correlation. I think people are talking about that not enough, but it is starting to get some coverage. Roberta Ferdman in the Washington Post Walk blog has done some good stuff on this. But that's an issue, I think, outside of the purview of traditional food media that could be thought of more. You know, that's all part of our food system and the haves and the have-nots. Things that that's some of the issues that we like to bring to light that aren't necessarily the sexiest topics are not going to win us in page views, but it's something we feel needs to be covered.
Right. And I mean, and you know, having a place for that and being known for that conversation, like, someone else might read about it or pick it up, or a policymaker, or just to kind of, like, you know, change has to start somewhere, and it has to be written about in certain locations. And it's great that you cover those things, because they are issues, and it is, you know, allows people to point to, like, this is an important issue, as not being, like, kind of in the shadows.
Yeah. I mean, we try to be part of the conversation, and just that's. I mean, I think that is another thing that distinguishes. Well, I mean, I don't want to say that other people don't do this, but I think that has been always part of our founding mission, is that we want to cover things regardless, and NPR's mission in general, regardless of whether it's going to be popular or an audience favorite. But if we feel it's an important issue, we're going to put it on the table.
Well, I don't want to talk entirely about kind of heavy issues. Are there any, like, some of your more favorite, like, fun food stories? Because there is a joy to food in the world. It's not all negative. Is there anything in particular you've covered that has put a smile on your face that the readers reacted to positively?
Oh, my. This is very silly, but when we did a coffee week several years ago, there are Japanese latte artists that do these, like, works of art in foam. And I'm not talking about your little heart or your little leaf, whatever you see at your standard little cafe. I'm talking about 3D art of, you know, like, portraits of Einstein or Hello Kitties that actually emerge in foam out of your cup. I think George Sakai shared that, and we got over 500,000 page views on that one page. People really like food art, apparently.
That's amazing. Well, I want to thank you for joining us, and, you know, of course, also for all the good work that you do. Where can people find Salt? Where can people follow you guys? Instagram, submit stories, etc., share links.
Well, we are online at npr.org/thesalt, and on Twitter we are on at NPR Food, and we are actually just launching an Instagram. I know it's 2016, right? Well, but we really think about everything super hard before we do it.
I mean, if you're gonna launch a food blog in 2011, where there's 10,000 others, if you're gonna launch an Instagram in 2016, there's no rush. You gotta have the what have you determined, without giving away all the secrets, what the focus of the Instagram is gonna be, or any kind of like rules of conduct?
Oh, that's top secret.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough. Well, thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate it. We have a song from Midnight Magic coming up, and then Beverly will be live in studio on Snacky Tunes.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm.
Spanning the rolling hills of Vermont's Champlain Valley and easternmost Washington County, New York, 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. Rotational grazing on pesticide-free and fertilizer-free pastures produces the sweetest milk and the tastiest cheese. All of their cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves.
Consider Bardwell Farm is also a big supporter of Heritage Foods USA's No Goat Left Behind program. No Goat Left Behind is a serious effort launched in 2011 by Heritage Foods USA, designed to introduce goat meat to American diners and provide a sustainable end market for dairy animals.
For more information, please visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
All right, welcome back. We have Beverly live in studio. Hey, guys.
Hi. Hello.
You want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Drew.
Okay.
My name is Scott.
Hey, how's it going?
Really good.
We were very surprised that we knew each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not put the email to the face.
Yeah, that's okay.
And now we have.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show. Very excited to have you on. I played one of your songs, like, when Leo... had one of the other bands on. I was like, it's always been in the back of my mind to make sure that you came on the show.
Oh, thank you.
So very excited. And good timing as well, too.
Yes.
Spring is up around the corner, maybe?
Around the corner. We're touring. The record's coming out. Good timing.
First off, you're rushing the interview.
Okay, don't get to the talking points.
You're messing up the whole thing.
Why don't we talk about Snacky Tunes instead first?
No, no. So why don't we get a little history on how things came to be?
So I started the band, it was a side project with me and Frankie Rose, and we made the first record together, and then she moved to LA, and I just toured it with other band members, including Scott, and we sort of started collaborating more and made the second record together, and that's what's coming out in May.
And what is it like to kind of go from writing as like a duo to putting a band together? How did that evolve the songs?
We kind of still write as a duo. We've started incorporating like more people, doing more live in studio recording. But I'm like a solo writer, and then we bounce ideas off of each other.
I just got like a good vision of you like in a dark room with a candle, with like a quill and like parchment and being like, no one must disturb my process.
Yeah, it's usually lamb's blood that I'm writing in.
It's a classic lamb's blood record.
We just saw The Witch last night. I'm like,
so good.
Get something
it's
me about
so
it.
Good. Freaky as hell.
So
we
good.
I thought it was scary because there was debate as to whether or not it was actually scary.
Parts were.
We were how scared. Like, 10 for me, I know this sounds stupid, is Talented Mr. Ripley because it's so psychologically messed up.
I saw Blair Witch, like, the first night it came out, and that, like, freaked me out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, if I had waited a week and read anything about it, I would have been, like, not scared, but just kind of, like, the first of that kind of found footage.
Oh,
type
yeah,
of vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought The Witch was pretty scary.
Yeah.
Without giving anything away, the last kind of, like, 20 minutes are pretty, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
pretty uplifting.
Yeah, pretty great for a Saturday night. So in the writing process, the two of you, but like kind of bringing in a live band, do they throw ideas into the mix, or is it like it's mostly fully formed and they just kind of bring in instrumentation into the studio?
Yeah, they definitely bring ideas because everyone plays things differently. Like we were talking about this the other day. It's like if you give someone who's a bass player an eighth note thing to do, they'll play it differently just because of the way their bodies do that. Like it just comes out very personally for each person.
Yeah.
So
right.
I think people bring different things
to someone and just say, okay, reproduce this bass line.
Yeah.
And it just seems like the easiest punk rock bass line you've ever heard.
Like three notes.
It'll just sound different. Like if three different people would just do it differently. And it's like shocking. It just seems like the most straightforward thing. But I guess people just, there's nuances in how people play it.
And when you bring the people in, I mean, is it like a hummed out thing? Is it an idea? Do you like? Are you excited about like the nuances that they're bringing to the parts, or do you hear something in your head and you're like, please just try to get this as close as possible?
That's like a never ending conversation, and you always have to feel it out every time you do it. Because in the same,
what if you scare someone? What if you witch someone and they have to? They like want to leave.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You have to just like everyone has to
you
feel
to, like,
included.
Sweet talk them.
Yeah,
I think you should come in with the idea that maybe they're going to bring something to the table that you hadn't previously thought of. Mm. And then you'll find out very quickly if they're bringing something delicious or they're bringing something that's like belongs in another recipe. So when they bring something...
Do not make food analogies because we're on the food show.
Yeah, that's great. We live for this.
So you find out very quickly whether or not they should like follow a script very strictly,
yeah,
or whether or not they just get free rein to, you know, kind of do whatever they want.
Yeah,
just throw in there. Yeah, it's interesting. How do you go about finding the? I mean, you know, once you and Frankie moved out, Wes, how did you two meet, and you know, how did you kind of form the new iteration?
Well, I actually produced the first, a couple songs from the first Beverly record, or like played, mm-hmm, you know, and just did some work on them. And then when it came time to put the band together, I thought, you know, I was in the running.
Yeah, you wanted to do it.
Yeah, really wanted to do it.
And then, like, I, like, just called you every day and texted.
Whatever. It was like, we had to put it together.
Sell, actually, I was like, I need to be playing in this band.
Yeah.
I think I did that.
You're like, here's the thing. I have the masters. I'm not sending them. When I'll bring them to the first tour stop, and then you'll get them, like, one at a time until I slowly, like, Costanza my way into the band.
It was actually, honestly, during the mixing process for the first record, where you put your foot down very adamantly about, like, a mixing choice, and I was like, whoa, he's really invested. Like, I think he really cares about this.
That.
And he was right. And it was, like, a great thing, and I'm glad that that's what happened on the record.
That's amazing. Like, that you... I mean, that's also a fine line as being a producer, where it's like, well, you know, it's like, this is how I feel, but ultimately it's your record, but you kind of just went for it.
I never do that. I never put the foot down, except I thought... I just felt so strongly about it that I just advocated very strongly on for one thing.
Yeah.
And then it worked out.
What was it?
There was two different versions of Honeydew. Mm-hmm. One that had been kind of worked on by a very talented producer, engineer, and he made some changes to it that, like, improved some things and, like, lost other things. Mm. And I thought that the things that he lost were so crucial that it doesn't even matter if the other version sounds worse, quote unquote, but the vibe and like the musicality of it were more present in the first version, like the demo-y version, and I thought that it was very crucial that we went with that.
Yeah.
I'm
really
sold.
Yep.
You almost kind of, I kind of saw the fire like right behind his eye.
Right.
Like you were reliving it.
Yes.
The
like
still
such an easygoing person, but very adamant about music. That's really the only thing that matters to either of us, so it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want in your corner.
Yeah, it's great.
Right.
Well, why don't we hear a song?
Cool.
What are you going to play for us first on that beautiful Martin?
Oh, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think we're going to play the first song off the new record.
Nope.
Nobody's heard it.
Uh-oh. Snacky Tune. We used to have an air horn sound effect. But
What's the Snacky Tunes theme song? Is there one?
Yeah, there is. Oh. When you go back, since you were in, you can hear it at the beginning of that episode. Wallpaper did it.
Like, cute.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We were going to do, I've told the story a million times, but we were going to, like, every month we were going to get a new theme song. We were just going to get our friends to write it. And then he sent that in, and it was like, we're like, oh, this is perfect. I mean, yeah, anyway. The only other version of his Freelance Whales came in and covered it. Because they just listened to it on repeat in their tour van.
So
they like, they're like, we want to do our version of it. So there's like an alternative take of
that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great little 7-inch you should put out.
Yeah. I mean, it's like... Yeah, anyway. All right, so let's hear the song.
Cool. Can I get on it too? Can I get on it too? Ooh. Ooh.
You know, I was watching that Martin documentary today. I didn't realize, but Kurt Cobain used Martin in Nirvana Unplugged. Like, almost all of the Unplugged had Martin guitars.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a fancy guitar.
I mean, they just had them in studio for them to play on, which sure. Now hearing it, I was like, oh, yeah, I just re-listened to Nirvana Unplugged today, and you can just hear that sound.
In what I just did?
Yes.
Great.
No, I mean, I'm not kidding.
Exactly.
Anyway. So, on a sophomore record, I'm kind of curious, what topics and, concepts are you diving into that are maybe different from the first record you wrote?
I think just concepts in general. That song is about, I was writing that sitting at the Williamsburg waterfront, actually, just looking around and looking at sights, and wrote a song about it.
Which, the one on Grand, or where?
With the stadium lighting in it, yeah. North 7th.
Man,
North
that's 6th. Such a great, I mean, every time I turn the corner of that place, I'm still, blown away by the view of the city.
Yeah.
It's it's inspiring.
You've been in Williamsburg for a while. Maybe you experienced the same thing. When they first opened up that stretch of waterfront,
yeah.
It was just a big open field.
Yeah.
And then I came to it one day and it had a grid of streetlights on it.
Yeah.
Were you shocked and horrified by that? Or is that just no big deal and I'm the only person who cares about that and thinks that's a disaster?
I mean, I lived on North 4th and Wythe, so I saw, we lived there and then we just saw, the development coming. One day they put up, stoplights on Wythe.
Sure, yeah.
Or when they changed, I forget, it was Kent or Wythe used to go both ways and then they turned it into a one-way. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just saw that evolve, over time. Mm-hmm. So whenever they do this stuff, it's just, kind of inevitable.
Yeah.
And that stuff. I don't know. I mean,
there's but I wonder if it was Central Park and all of a sudden people went to Central Park one day and there was just, every 35 feet there was, a big street light. There might be an outcry.
Yeah. I think people would ride, but I think for there's maybe there's the grandfather clause and this is if you're gonna put a park now you need to have light.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. But I do agree that if you put street lights in the middle of Central Park, people would melt.
No, I know. I'm literally the song is I'm so just astonished at how fast it changed and that's what it's about. But on the other hand, it's we need to be thankful that it's not a strip mall. It's actually a park. Yeah. So that's great.
Some people would argue that they didn't give us all the park that I was promised for that. Oh, but that's probably for another.
Yeah.
For the next show.
I mean, it's written in silly string on Kent and North 14th.
Yeah, that's what's going to break the thing wide open.
Yeah, exactly. But
I guess it's everyone sees it. It's we all know that it's that it's an issue. So besides how quickly things change, what are some of the other topics that you've gone into for this record?
Just change and growing up and friendships changing, and there's a lot of just love songs and I think change and growing up. That's what it's about.
What is the qualities of a good love song for a Beverly track? What's got
honestly,
it in there?
I think it's just the music and the way that melody and chords go together in a way that is romantic or interesting. It doesn't have to be lyrics for me.
Just sonically.
Just a nice melody that is kind of forlorn and evokes something. That's what I like.
You?
I'm kind of in the same boat.
You're
if you just grab the lyrics from any love song, five random love songs,
yeah.
And just read them all back to back, I think they would all kind of be in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
But what people did with that was maybe the thing that drove the stake into your heart as a listener.
Yeah, it was the chord progression or just the way that they sung.
Yeah.
Those
yeah. Because I listen to my favorite songs that are love songs. And
what's
I'm
your favorite
and
love
I'm
song?
Like, how did they do that?
What you gotta say favorite. I won't make you choose, but what's top three love song?
Well, we've been really into you know the Elliott Smith, the posthumous Elliott Smith album?
Yeah.
There's the song Shooting Star that I think is like, I guess that's not a love song. It's a love song because
yeah,
it's about a girl
like,
that's
spurned or like
yeah.
ex. A breakup song?
Yeah.
Like you used to love someone.
Yeah.
But then. I like Oh Yoko.
Oh,
that's
good.
A great, great love song.
We went on like a John Bryan kick and went back and like dove back into Fiona Apple and the song like I'll Know, which is like on the second.
Oh, yeah.
The way she sings that song.
Don't even get
like,
me started.
Okay. But I'm just like the way that she ends that song and you hear her voice crack and you're just, yeah, I know.
Oh my God.
But like that to me is like, I was like, okay, like. You would have to have like a cold heart to not like kind of just like melt on that song.
Oof!
It's not even the album closer. There's like another song after that.
There's like seven other songs that are just as good.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, she's one of my favorites for sure.
Can we hear another song?
Yeah. Should
what
we
are you
do
play?
Crooked Cop?
Well,
let's do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
We're gonna need to do some tuning.
What's
for a second?
Yeah, we can just chat. What's this song about? While you tune away.
This is a song that is another love song.
Oh.
It's a metaphor about someone who can get away with anything,
yeah.
like a bad cop.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I like that this is the theme because spring really is like going to come to Williamsburg. When spring comes here, it's like a explosion of people and like hand-holding and like public affection. And it's like, you know.
How do you feel about PDA?
If I'm doing it, great.
Yeah.
No, I think it's
Are
like...
Are you a practitioner?
No. I don't think my girlfriend would let me. No, I was kidding. I think that it's like, it's fine if it's cute, but if it's like gratuitous, it's kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I'm like all for it.
Okay.
Less for it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's a weird... If it's done well, it's great.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I do enjoy people, like, maybe, like, because of, like, the nightlife, like, seeing people, like, make out on dance floor, and I was like, well,
right,
that's, like, kind of
fun.
But people who are just, like, going at it in, like, a park in the middle of the day are kind of just like, I don't know. Call me old-fashioned.
Right, yeah. I think that maybe the context where I don't think it's appropriate is if you're hanging around with your friends,
yeah.
and there's, like, a small group of maybe four or six at the dinner table, and then when it happens, it sort of creates, like, factions.
Oh.
Or, like, divisions.
Yeah, yeah.
In a
yeah.
social setting.
Okay.
You know, where it's,
yeah.
like, because no one else is, you want to be inclusive
yeah.
when you're out.
Oh, so if it was, like, a group PDA, you'd be fine. Like, if everyone, yeah.
Honestly, if everyone did it at the same time, I think that would be appropriate.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let's hear Crooked Cop.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Close enough.
Why do you make me eat pizza before I sing? I mean, that's the question.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
You were hungry.
No one made me. Like, I just did it. Okay.
You know, hold on. Sorry. Okay, I'm ready.
One, two. Tell me to hand it over here.
just wouldn't do for hire.
So what's the plan for the new record? It's coming out soon.
Yeah, it's coming out May 6th. We have our release show May 5th with Easy TV and Painted Zeros and Tall Juan.
Where is it going to be?
At Babies.
Of course. I mean, I could have guessed.
It's like, where's the party? Babies.
Babies. They really just, it's great. They've been on the show before. They're just amazing.
Yeah, they're my dudes.
Yeah,
they're the best.
The best is when they open up the windows and the whole show. I remember that Dan Deacon show they had, and they just halfway through the show just open it up, and you're like, oh, this is such a smartly designed venue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that little wall is genius.
Yeah, and then are you guys going on tour maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you headed to?
So we're leaving on Wednesday to tour to South By.
Okay.
So we're doing U.S. dates in March with this band Lazy Eyes, and then
great name.
Yeah. Nice guys. And then in May, we're going to the UK and Europe.
Ooh.
And then in June, we're doing the US again.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Any cities you're particularly excited to hit?
I've never played in Florida, and we're going to be in Tallahassee in March.
Okay.
Coming up right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, apparently the promoter's awesome, and it's going to be like a house show. It'll be great.
Yeah, I mean, touring into South By is pretty great. Touring out of South By, you're just probably like, I just want my bed.
You're like, I know, we have a lot of South By shows.
Let's talk about it. Where are you playing? Any ones you want to call out in particular?
Yeah, we're doing 7,
that's
I
good.
Wanna say. Is that true? 2, 4, 5, 6. 6?
Okay, 6 is still great.
Yeah. Still, maybe like 3 too many.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. It's.
I feel
great.
Like you either do like the one show, or you just like, we're down there. Like, let's just pack it in.
I know. I'm so happy that we got asked to do so many. It's like,
that's
amazing.
Yeah.
We have the Canine Showcase Wednesday at midnight, and that's going to be awesome. And what else? We're playing like Container Bar for JanSport Collide. Yeah.
Sure.
Doing something with Dull Tools.
We're doing like a really cool, like a Hotel Vegas, like marathon thing, and the OCs are playing.
Awesome.
Like, I think on the outdoor stage, same day. Yeah. So that'll be great.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, we want to make sure we get time for one more song. Where can people find you, follow you, pre-order the record?
Everything is at We Are Beverly.
Oh, great.
That's just everything.
Oh, okay.
Facebook, Twitter, Insta.
Okay. Well, big thank you to Maria from The Salt for calling in today. Hello to my brother and his fiance, who are out currently getting ready for the wedding in a few weeks. Yeah, I know.
Ooh, congrats. Where's the wedding?
It's going to be in downtown LA.
Wow.
Fun.
Yeah. If you happen to be in South By and you're in town on March 14th, Darren and I, along with Heritage Radio Network and South by Southwest Bites, will be doing 5 panels from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. At the Driscoll. It's open to all, I believe. We'll be covering stuff like the modern state of food reporting, pop culture and food, The Spice is Right, and a few other topics. Flyers we post on Instagram later this week. Be sending out some email blasts. Shout out to my girlfriend, who did confirm that she would be into some PDA on text message. So things are looking up. I'm glad we got that out of the way. What are you gonna take us out with?
We have a little Everly Brothers cover.
Ooh,
perfect. Love theme.
Thanks for coming on. Oh, and thank you to Leo, as always.
Yeah, he's the best. Yeah,
thank you to Leo for hooking it up.
Yeah. All right. Take us out.
Yeah.
Don't kiss me if you don't love me. Don't.
country.
Talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.